Rebecca is a good friend and a good influence. She is the creator behind A Humble Place, with a website and an Instagram both by that name, where I first found her when I was looking for Charlotte Mason art studies. And I got many of her beautiful sets, which we love. In this episode, though, she is coming to teach me about her meal planning strategies. I am now using her method, and it is revolutionizing everything that I am doing. I am so grateful to Rebecca for joining me today to discuss this, because I am not by nature a meal planner, but with a very busy summer coming up, I need to have some good frameworks in place to rely on for meal planning, having others being able to participate in the food preparation, being able to know what is coming down the pipeline. And it was really interesting to me how her meal planning works with an ancestral and seasonal food lifestyle, which is the way she and her family eat. So many meal planning ideas and options out there assume you're going to be going to the grocery store every couple of days and buying a lot of convenience or unseasonal foods, which just doesn't suit the way a lot of us are eating. Thank you, Rebecca, for opening up a whole new world to me. I am so excited to share this episode with you today. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Ancestral Kitchen Podcast with Allison, a European town dweller in central Italy, and Andrea, living on a newly created family farm in Northwest Washington State, USA. Pull up a chair at the table and join us as we talk about eating, cooking, and living with ancient ancestral food wisdom in a modern world kitchen.
Hello, hello, everyone. I am here not with Allison today, but with a good friend, a listener of the podcast, a patron. Welcome, Rebecca.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining me, because I've just been wanting to pick your brain on this for like ever. Very excited about what we're going to talk about. So let me introduce you to the people. Rebecca is, as I said, a podcast listener and also patron, and she is you've become such a good friend, Rebecca. We've had some very long...
You've become a good friend.
Very too. Long text conversations. You're the creator of ahumbleplace.com, and you're on Instagram with the same name. And I actually added this to my notes because I love it so much. You got that phrase, a humble place, from a quote from, I don't know, how do you say this? Camille Pizarro? Pizarro, yes. Blessed are they who see beautiful things in humble places where other people see nothing. I love that.
Yeah.
So you...
Yeah, me too.
You make amazing home education resources and art studies. That's actually how I met you. I think maybe Anna Vance had posted about you or something. And I started getting your art prints, and then I started getting more of them. And now we just love them, your art studies. So if anybody listening has their kombucha handy, take a shot, because I'm going to say her name, Charlotte Mason. We use Charlotte Mason type education philosophy, and you produce resources that fit that educational philosophy. So I know also many of our patrons and listeners use your stuff. So that's awesome.
I appreciate that. And I really love to make it.
Yeah, they're gorgeous. I'm really a snot about art prints. I know you are too. So that works.
Well, I'm glad I live up to your standards.
Yes. And actually, Francine, who's one of our listeners in Australia, she's getting some of your PDFs, because shipping to Australia, obviously, would be ridiculous. But she can still use them and get them printed at a printer there. So that's cool.
Yes. Yeah, I'm glad I can offer that to other countries.
Yeah. So we're actually not going to talk about art today, though, although Allison is an artist and I like to look at art, so this could be a fun conversation. But you also have, as I started to learn, you have a lot of wisdom and practice with food. You've posted videos of your Azure hauls before. You've posted ideas for meal planning. And you've posted, you've posted pictures of you sorting out your school schedule for the week and things like that. And I just really admire the way you choose to organize things and the way that you organize your meals and plan your food and your budget and whatnot. And so, yeah, learning from you about that today is my goal. Learning how to meal plan, keep in the budget, save money, eat good.
Yeah, I think that's, yeah, it's become very important to me. So I can understand that it would be important to other people. Hopefully I can help you.
Yes, I hope so. I'm in desperate. I'm just kidding. Well, it's really a good way, as you've illustrated in some of your discussion on it, it's a good way to save money by planning ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, that's definitely something we need these days with food inflation being at 50%. And it's hitting the European audiences too. And so, yeah, we need to be planning.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely think that meal planning is a way to counter that because, you know, all around it just makes you more intentional about your food choices and you're not just wasting ingredients. And I think when you have certain meals in mind, it also makes it easier for you to find better sources for them too that can be more economical.
That's true. Well, then let's start by asking you what we ask everyone. Is the last thing you ate before we got on?
Well, so I'm trying a low histamine diet right now, just because of some health problems that I've been having. So my meals have been a little weird lately.
Nice. We love weird.
Yeah, weird is nice.
Weird is good.
It can be. So this weekend on Sunday, I made a big batch of a chicken and potato soup, and then froze it in individual portions because. Mm. With low histamine, you're not supposed to eat leftovers.
Right.
You're supposed to like freeze stuff right away. So I heated up some of that. And then I also made a batch of some blueberry muffins that supposedly have low histamine friendly ingredients. I'm still learning about this. So
yeah.
I know that I'm probably going to make mistakes, but hopefully I'm not making any right now. But I had that along with the soup. And yeah, that was my lunch.
Sounds delish. Wow.
Yeah, it was really good. I made the soup from some meat stock that I had made a couple of weeks ago, actually, just to make sure, you know, it was cooked for the proper amount of time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very nourishing.
I think our listeners mostly know that bone broth is something you can't do on the low histamine, but like a short 4-hour meat stock is A-okay. So,
yeah.
Yep. I like that you prepped it all. So that you could eat without all that labor-intensive time.
Yeah, it makes it a lot easier to reheat because there are meals that I'm going to still be making for my family that I can't have.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I have a big batch of soup made, I can just thaw whatever I need while they have, you know, whatever I've made for them. And it's just so much more convenient than trying to make two meals at once.
Oh, yeah. I tried that at first when I was doing gaps myself.
That yeah.
Horrible. And then I started freezing jars of soup. That was the only way.
Yes. Definitely easier.
Oh, that's awesome. Well.
What about you? What did you have?
Well, when I came home just now, I had a steer in the back of my car. In peace.
But not alive.
Not alive. Not this time. But a lot of things in the back of my car that I've trashed it. But this time, I did okay. Gary made espresso and then he steamed raw milk and served it to me when I came in the door. So, I guess that's What did I eat before that? Oh, before that, when I went to pick up the steer, the guy who slaughtered it and hung it for us, his farm is almost across the road from my friend's coffee stand, and her mom, it's going to get really confusing if I try to connect all of this, but her mom, who their family owns the raw milk farm that we get our milk from. So her mom bakes everything that goes into the coffee stand. So I stopped.
Ooh, that sounds good.
I stopped and got some things to bring back. And one of the things that I got that I ate in the car was a bagel.
Oh.
It was so good. Probably can't
I have, not.
Have that on low history.
No. Well, maybe. I don't know. Like I said, I'm still learning about it, but we're gluten-free and it's really difficult to find good gluten-free bagels.
So yeah.
At least it has been for me.
It is hard to find good bagels.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Full stop. I am really picky about bagels.
Yeah.
And
oh, I didn't know this about you.
Well, now you know. Turns out I'm pickier about a lot of things than I thought.
You're not quite as laid back as you thought, maybe.
Yeah, I always see go like, oh, I'm so easygoing. And then somebody goes, would you like to eat this? Yes. And I'm like,
food is a whole different beast,
yeah,
though. When it comes to pickiness, I have found.
Are we picky or are we selective? Or is there
I think we're selective. I think we're just,
sounds nice.
Yeah. We're just, you know, we appreciate quality.
Choosy.
If you've been around ancestral food for 10 minutes, you know liver is a superfood. You're looking at a food packed with vitamins A, K, a broad spectrum of B vitamins, CoQ10, bioavailable iron, plus many essential minerals and more. Liver is your first stop when seeking to gain energy and restore your health. Not only is it a delicacy and staple of traditional diets, it's the first thing most animal predators go for when hunting. Are you looking for a good way to work liver into your daily life, but getting it on the table just isn't happening yet or as much as you'd like? This is where liver capsules come in. Allison and I are both supplementing our ancestral diets with liver capsules from One Earth Health. We get all the incredible benefits of liver, even when we're on the road or preparing non-liver meals for our family, and the sourcing and preparation has all been handled for us. One Earth Health produces nutritious organ capsules from 100% grass-fed New Zealand-raised cattle. Support the pod by purchasing through our link, and you'll also get 5% off and free shipping as a bonus. Go to oneearthhealth.com/ancestralkitchen or check the show notes.
So, why meal planning? Why? I have never been a planner. I've always resisted meal planning. But, as we alluded to earlier, inflation is just out of sight on everything, and especially food. I've seen sort of minimized numbers on the inflation, but moms who are tracking food know that food costs have gone up as much as 50% in some places, and even more in others. Mm-hmm. And you and I both live in extremely expensive states. Mm-hmm. So we feel that. And people are concerned. And without changing, like, they're not living large, but they have less to spend because their dollar is just not going very far now. So they're tightening up on the budgets. And Allison and I both feel that ancestral peasant food is not only the most economical food, but it's also really good for us. And it benefits our health and the health of our fields and our farmers and the longevity of our food production. But eating ancestrally, especially if you want to do it in a budget conscious way, does require some thought and planning ahead. Otherwise you, it can be, it could be really, really expensive really quickly. So teach us about your system, which you have described to me over voice memos. I don't want to hear in person now.
Well, what you just said, I mean, I think you can look at, there's a website where you can look at the U.S. government has calculated for current food costs.
Oh.
And so they have like different levels of, this is what you'd spend if you're on a low budget. This is what you'd spend on a medium budget. This is what you do on a higher budget. And it has skyrocketed just in the last couple of years. It's actually been really interesting to look at because I used to base my budget on that. And it just kept going up and up and up and up. And I was like, well, I don't think people are making more. But
you need to send me that. I'll put that in the show notes if you can send me that website.
Okay.
Because I am curious.
Yeah.
I've never seen that.
Yeah, I haven't checked it in a while. So I don't know if they're still updating it.
They
were for a long time. So I know that's what I was kind of thinking. They don't want it to be obvious. And I'm not sure exactly how accurate those numbers are. And obviously, it's going to be different. You know, if you're eating like Hamburger Helper versus you're going to, you know, a local farmer, you're going to a place that sells better quality meat. Every avenue of shopping is going to be very different. So it may not be exactly accurate, but it's just been interesting to look
at
it.
As a baseline, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So I have a system. I feel like it works really well for me. And so I'm going to go through it and hopefully it can actually, you know, give you some ideas, take from it what you can.
Okay. And
so I have a month.
I was going to say, you mentioned gluten-free. So, and then you also said low histamine. So I was going to ask you, but you kind of already answered it. Do you accommodate special diets or just anything? Go.
We do. So my husband and I are gluten-free. Mm-hmm. About 16 or 17 years ago, I was having problems with my thyroid.
Oh, okay.
And so my doctor tested for gluten and it turned out that both he and I had a gluten sensitivity. We've never had our kids tested, but just, you know, because it's easier around.
Yeah.
And because we've been doing this for 15 years, we're just a gluten-free household.
Perfect.
My daughter also has an egg white allergy. And so anytime I make anything with eggs, I separate out the whites. And she also can't have shellfish. So, you know, the rare times I will have a craving for crab cakes or something like that, which she doesn't like anyway, I have to make something else for her. Okay. So just a few things. But because we've been doing it for so long, it's just the norm for us. So it doesn't feel like an inconvenience.
Okay, good. Okay, that's good to hear. Yeah. Because a lot of people hear meal planning, but then it's like just stuff that they can't do anyways. And so it feels, you know, and feel frustrating to try to read a lot of the mainstream advice on meal planning. So that's good to hear.
Yeah, I think if you're trying to accommodate several different diets, that can be really challenging because like we kind of talked about a little bit ago, you feel like you have to make multiple meals for one meal. And so, like I said, what has worked for us is just having everybody eat the same thing. So I don't make a whole lot of egg dishes.
Yeah,
that's
logical.
Or I try to find a workaround. So yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Just lead me down the trail, whichever way you want to go.
Okay. So I used to do, I do monthly meal planning.
Oh, wow.
So when I started meal planning, I used to do weekly meal planning. And I think in some seasons, you actually may need to do weekly meal planning, especially when it comes time for like fresh produce to be available locally. If you're getting a CSA or you're visiting a local farmer and getting your produce from them and you don't know what you're going to get until that week, although you can generally, you know, have a general idea, but if they have something special that week that they may have extra zucchini that's, you know, on sale or whatever, because they have so much zucchini, you can take advantage of that. But I've actually found for me that monthly planning works better. And I learned this several years ago when I was sitting down to do my weekly meal planning. It was just taking so long. My husband actually used to make fun of me for how long it took me to do the weekly meal plan. And the program that I use to keep track of my recipes and to make grocery lists for me and to do the actual planning is called Plan to Eat.
Oh, never heard of it.
And they have an option in there where you can copy all of your recipes from a previous time period and paste them into your current time period. And so for instance, it's March right now. So I could take all of my meals from last March and paste them into this March.
Oh, what?
And then it's all planned for me unless I want to try a new thing.
Well, for those of us that are very rotational in our food, that is that an app or a website or what?
It's a website and they also have an app. So I've been using it for about 13 years. It really, really does make meal planning easier. You don't have to do it that way. You don't have to use that. I've just found it to be easier for me.
I've never even heard of it. Is it paid or is it free?
Yeah. It's paid.
Nice.
Yeah. It works out. They usually have a yearly sale for Black Friday where it's about 50% off.
What?
So it works out to like $4 a month or something
like
that.
It's
not very
that.
Expensive. Yeah. It saves so much time, which, you know, you have to factor that into a lot of things. When something takes a lot longer, that's time that is lost doing other
okay,
things.
Okay, great.
So yeah.
Awesome. I will find a link or get a link from you and put that in the show notes too then.
Yeah, I can send
everybody
that to
who's
you.
Listening right now is washing dishes, so they can't write it down. So
yes, it's plan to eat.
All right, awesome. Okay.
So that kind of springboarded me. I don't still do that because we do like to try new things, and I learn more stuff, you know, as I'm listening to your podcast or reading things or whatever, just things that I want to try and systems that I kind of want to put in place. So I don't do it that way anymore, but it springboarded me into monthly planning because it was so much easier for me to just sit down once a month and just get it all done in one sitting and not have to worry about it every single week. Another thing was that we started buying a lot more from Azure Standard. So you mentioned my Azure hauls a little bit ago, and I know it's something that you've mentioned before that you use.
Yeah.
We've been using Azure Standard for about 12 years now or 13 years. And we buy a large bulk of our food from them, and that delivery comes once a month. And so the week that my order is due, I take a look at their sale catalog and see what new offerings they have or what's on sale. And for the most part, because we buy bulk items from Azure, it's just more about replenishing our bulk supply. Mm-hmm. But I also like to see, like, is there anything we want to try that's new? Or is there anything that's expiring that we have that I need mm-hmm. to replenish, but I also need to use up mm-hmm. in the coming 4 weeks? And then I'll sit down, and I have 7 categories, usually related to protein, and I come up with 4 meals in each category. And that gives me 28 meals that I can use over the next 4 weeks. And I don't necessarily use every single one of them because, you know, sometimes stuff just comes up. Like
yeah.
we're out and it's late and we end up eating out. But it at least gives me 28 options for meals. And then I can also plan ahead. So if I know, like, I'm going to be making a big roast, I will have leftover meat or leftover beef from that. So then the following night I can make like cottage pie or a soup or whatever and keep using that meat until it's used up. And then I don't end up wasting anything. So my categories are, like I said, related to proteins. So I have beef and then one category for like a vegetarian dish. So that would be like beans or eggs. And then sometimes if I have extra meat, I'll throw that in there too. And then another category for pork, chicken, fish, and then one for staples that we have every month. So like, we'll have roast chicken at least once a month, pizza, tacos. We like to grill burgers, that sort of stuff. And then another category for soup. And then I come up, like I said, with 4 meals that fit into each of those 7 categories. And that's 28 meals. If there's any, you know, birthdays or holidays coming up, I'll factor those in. And then I'll lay them out in plan to eat or a calendar. You could also just use a calendar each week. And then I'll have like 1 day for beef, 1 day for chicken, 1 day for pork, unless I'm using leftovers. Does that make sense so far?
I am like completely shook. Why is that so simple? You have 7 categories, which all sound, yeah, okay, they all sound super reasonable. And then you just have to come up with 4 in each, and that's the whole month. I'm not a math person, so I never noticed that.
I'm not
that's
either.
Amazing. I like that they're sorted. So can you wait? Because I'm explain it to me like I'm 5 years old, then let's go to the beef category. So mm-hmm. you might write down for the month roast beef. Mm-hmm. And then would you infer that you'd have leftovers and then also write cottage pie?
Okay. Yes. Yeah, you can do that. I mean, you could do that, or you could just know that it's flexible.
Yeah.
That's just a kind of an overall idea. And that way, you know, that week you're probably going to have two beef dishes. Right. So the next week, maybe you won't have any beef. You'll just have two chicken dishes.
Yeah, but that, which makes sense.
Or you could, yeah, or you could plan that, like, that week, instead of your vegetarian dish, you have cottage pie, and that's your leftover. The vegetarian day is mainly economical. It's not for any other reason. Yeah. It's just, that's a day when we're not going to use a meat, like an animal protein.
But you said also slash extra meat. So you might.
Yes.
You might make that roast beef and then say, wow, we had so much left over. I'm just going to sub in cottage pie instead of whatever.
Beans. Yeah. Yeah. And if you made a roast chicken and you have leftover chicken or, you know, whatever, any that could be, I guess that day could be like a beans, eggs / leftovers day.
Totally.
If you want to get technical.
I wrote down the categories you said, and I'm just staring at them. And I never... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's, and I mean, you can obviously also come up with your own categories too. If there's other things, I'm trying to think of any other type of animal. If you have, like,
lamb.
A friend of mine has yak, so you could have a yak day or a lamb day or.
Yeah, I'll bet that a lot of our listeners have a yak in their freezer.
Yeah. Yep. I could have a yak day.
Well, yeah, like, we're really big on turkey, so I guess turkey, maybe just have a poultry category. Bird out of the freezer.
Yeah.
Or we've started getting into sheep. So maybe.
Yeah.
You mutton have or lamb category.
Mutton day.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or just have an organ category and just blow through a bunch of organs.
Yeah. If you have like any that you want to use up or whatever, that could also go in there. A lot of times what we do is grind them up in our other, like we usually don't have enough liver. So we'll would grind it up into our beef and just have it with our beef or
whatever. Us too. We never have enough liver. It's insane how much you can go through once you really start.
And that's one thing that doesn't stretch super well.
Yeah, that's true. Now that you've described the seven categories, can you rewind real quick and tell me again how you were using these? You were using these to plot out your Azure orders or we're at the,
this is just
we're a- at the meal planning week. Of your month.
Yeah. So I use one category for each day of the week. Okay. And then since there's four recipes in each category, that's 4 weeks.
What do you mean one category for each day of the week? Hold on.
So one day is beef. One day is the beans or eggs. One day is pork. One day is chicken. One day is fish. Right. One day is a staple. One day is soup.
Okay. And then they rotate over?
Yes. Okay. Yep. For 4 weeks.
Perfect. Oh man. I love this. Okay, keep going. I'm so like excited.
I'm glad it's helpful. Sometimes I look at it, I'm like, this is so convoluted.
You warned me. You said
it's how my brain
you
works.
Warned me. You said it's gonna sound a little convoluted, but once you settle, I can see that you settled into this and it sort of developed as you went. And I've learned that from homeschool because moms have asked me, can I watch what you're doing or can you show me? And I'm like, well, you probably don't want to start with this, but this is where we're at.
It's a routine. And I think that, you know, and you guys have talked about that too, like getting into routines in your kitchen with your ferments. Yes,
absolutely.
This is just another routine in my kitchen. Like I know, okay, today we're going to have beef or whatever, you know, and when you have a routine, there's less thinking involved.
Yeah. No, it's totally true.
Which is a good thing.
And I could see how, because when we've butchered birds, depending on what time of year it is or the breed of bird, then we've got some chickens that come out very odd sizes, large or small. And I'm looking at your chicken category and thinking, yeah, you know, you might pull a chicken out and it's twice as big as you thought. But I could see how it really helps you plan because this is how I estimate how many chickens I want to raise is like, estimate how many chickens I want to have per week. And if you are also maybe planning how many you're going to buy, because I know when we used to buy full frozen chickens that if we bought a case of them directly from the farm, we got quite a discount. So if you knew how and when you were going to use those bad boys up. Okay.
Yeah. And it's the same for beef.
Yeah.
I mean, when we get a side of beef from our raw milk dairy once a year, and it's become such a habit for me that I know which cuts we need, which cuts we want, and then how far I can get that poundage to stretch. Yeah. And if, you know, that'll last us a whole year.
No, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay. And I know that getting a side of beef, while it is not always possible for everyone, is far and away the most economical or one of the most economical ways to get meat versus buying a la carte cuts, which, you know, Allison has a teeny tiny freezer, so she can't get 300 pounds of beef at a time. But
right. And some farmers, some ranchers will split them up for you. One that we used to be in the past, he would do an eighth of a cow.
Wow.
So sometimes you'll find that they're flexible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she just got a bunch of sheep. She did a bunch of sheep at once and they just made it work.
Okay.
But it really brings your per pound cost down quite a lot. So if somebody says, oh, mm-hmm. you want to eat locally raised beef, grass fed, whatever, grass finished, and then you go look and see it's $14 a pound at the grocery store, you think, yeah, right. How is that ever going to happen? But when you're buying it as a side and it's costing half of that, then you think, oh, this is so, mm-hmm. it's even cheaper than getting the cheap stuff at the grocery store sometimes, which is insane.
Yeah. I think I calculated for our last one that I picked up in November for everything. So ground beef, filet mignon, for roasts, everything, it was $6 a pound.
That's insane. And so when somebody says, you know, you're the bourgeois for recommending eating off of a local farm, is because they're looking at the tiny little cuts that the farmer has to, you know, once you get into the butchering world, you see why the price gets so high to sell the a la carte pieces. But then you also see why the price is so low when you're buying a large chunk of cow. And I think Allison and I are going to be doing I don't know what day this episode is going out, but we're doing or have done an episode where we're going to talk a bit more about that. To help people plan. But then you say, I don't know how anybody could afford to buy beef at the grocery store.
Yeah, really. I mean, I don't, if we run out, which we don't normally do, but if we run out, I literally cringe when I have to buy it at the store, just because I'm like, I know I could get this. Fortunately, our raw milk dairy also offers a la carte options, which it's not as cheap as buying a whole side, but it's still better than going to the store.
It'll patch you through. That's the way I think of it. We tend to buy everything like you do also in bulk. And every once in a while we have to buy small bundles, but it doesn't absolutely break us because it's so rare.
Right. Exactly.
How do you feel about our food world? Do you want to see change like we do? If so, head over to patreon.com/ancestralkitchenpodcast and help support us to get this work out as far and wide as we can. To say thank you, we've got a host of extra ancestral food material to share with you. You can connect with us more deeply via our patron exclusive podcasts, our after show chats, our dedicated forum, and our ancestral food get togethers. And there's a library of downloads that will support you in your own kitchen. By joining, you'll be really helping us to continue making this podcast and to focus on having a bigger impact, reaching more people, making a greater difference, so we can move together towards the future food world we all want to see. We've got 4 levels of support to suit different pockets. Check out www.patreon.com/ancestralkitchenpodcast for all the details.
Okay, so you've got your categories. You've got your 28 meals.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it?
Well, then I plan them out. So I do it in Plan to Eat, but you could also just do it in a calendar. And for side dishes, I usually like those to be kind of flexible. So far, I've only done the main course. there are certain side dishes that I just make on a regular basis. So it's very simple things like roasted broccoli we really love the recipe from Nourishing Traditions for carrots vichy, cucumber salad, just different things that we have on a regular basis. And then when it comes to like CSA season or gardening season, if I want to substitute or add something to that based on what my farmer has, then I can do that. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we'll just have a salad with it, with some homemade dressing and call it good. That's our meal. So I'll kind of look at what our main course is for each day and just come up with a tentative side dish for that. And that's just for suppers. So our other meals are very, a lot simpler. We have the same thing every single day for breakfast. We have scrambled eggs. I make chicken sausage for my daughter from chicken thighs, which I do buy those in the package because it's not very economical to hack up a bunch of chickens just for their thighs.
No, not really. I have done it.
So we have, I'm sure you have.
It's a lot of work.
I'm unfortunately not growing my own or raising my own birds. So maybe someday. we'll have scrambled eggs or chicken sausage. Either muffins, I make a soaked oat and buckwheat muffin that I soak in kefir for, well, it was for all of us until I did this low histamine thing, or oatmeal, and then homemade kefir or yogurt. And those are our meals, our breakfasts during the week. And then on the weekends, we have a special breakfast in rotation that my husband makes. So he'll make pancakes or cottage potatoes. And then we'll have like bacon and scrambled eggs. And I make a soaked apple apple oat dish. So that's in rotation. So again, it's just another routine that keeps us from having to think about things. And then lunch is staples that we just have every week. So things like tuna, or I'll make ham and cheese melts for the kids, or just cheese, like sliced raw cheese, and then whatever we have that can be used as a side for that. Or leftovers. So it's pretty, those meals are pretty casual. It's more, most of the planning goes into the suppers.
Something you said in there so casually, you said it keeps us from having to think about things. That is worth $1 million right there, because how many jokes do you see out there about, oh, I didn't know that being an adult just meant I had to come up with dinner every day for the rest of my life. And, you know,
exactly.
I have literally stood in the kitchen in the morning and I just feel like my brain is going to break thinking, what are we going to eat for breakfast? And it's such a silly, it's like, I don't know, make oatmeal, you know, get over yourself. Mm-hmm. But my brain, it's just so many decisions to make. And is there a way we can just log into your plan to eat, like, follow this Instagram influencer and see what she's eating? Your breakfast sound very similar to ours. It's just that I have to think about it every time. And it's wasting a lot of dopamine for me. And I'm already low on that half the time.
So. Well, something you've talked about in the past is how you like pre-made an egg dish, like a baked egg dish. And then that would last you through the week. And I've tried to do that in the past as well, because that really appeals to me. Just being able to reheat something in the toaster oven or whatever. But my family's not a fan of it. So.
Yeah. Well,
if your family likes that, do that.
Yes.
Too.
This is the weird thing. I think things through when we have a big event, butchering or canning or something. And I think, well, I won't be able to stand in the kitchen. So I think it through. And then in the moment, I think, wow, this is so amazing to have this already thought through. What a life. Mm-hmm. And So you say we eat the same thing for breakfast every day, but then you listed like 10 different things. So you mean, you know, we have like 4 or 5 breakfasts and we just, you don't make all of that every day.
Just for Monday through Friday, mm-hmm. we have the eggs or the chicken sausage, the like soaked oats or the muffins. Or yogurt or kefir, depending on who is eating, because everybody likes something different. So those are just the options.
Okay.
And then on the weekends is when we do the rotation of the bigger things, like pancakes or cottage potatoes or the soaked oat apple.
Mm-hmm. Is that the cottage
that I make?
The cottage potatoes from Nourishing Traditions, because that's so
good. No, we haven't tried that one. And I think you talked about that in your favorite recipes from Nourishing Traditions. And I've been wanting to try it. We should do that one of these weekends. It was from a different cookbook.
How dare you?
We're going to try that one. I know. I'm such a traitor.
Get off this podcast right now.
Sorry.
I'm just kidding.
For mentioning another cookbook.
It's fine. We're all kind of like cookbook addicts over here, so it's fine. Okay.
I love it too. My copy is very battered.
I really like, I feel like in a way, even if I just planned the breakfast or I just planned the dinners already, my brain would have pressure off of it in a really big way. And something that Gary was telling me the other day, he said, what our weakness is using what we have, because we forget what we have, or we don't get it out in time, or we get it out too early, or whatever. And I feel like if I was doing your system, that would not be happening so much.
Yeah, I mean, it really does help to know what's coming up. So like on Sundays, I'll look at what we have coming up that week for meals. And if it's, you know, there aren't any schedule conflicts that have come up since I made the meal plan, I'll just pull out all of the proteins, the meats that we need that week, and stick them in a bowl in my fridge and let them thaw. And then I have them. I mean, yeah, there are definitely the times where I'm like, uh-oh, I forgot to take out, you know, whatever. Fish is a hard one because we have fish on Fridays. And so I'm often thawing fish in ways that I probably shouldn't be. Nobody's died yet. on like Friday afternoon. That's probably something I need to work on. But otherwise, the rest of it is usually thawed when it needs
to. We're recording on Tuesday. So for instance, do you already know what you're eating for dinner tonight?
Actually, I forgot.
Wow.
just because it's been kind of a hectic week, but I know at one point this week we were going to have a sausage and potato casserole, and I already have everything for that. So if I need to make that tonight, because I feel like I just need something simpler tonight, then I'll probably end up making that. Last night, I actually had another podcast interview yesterday for homeschooling, and it was just a really full day. And I had a chicken curry that I had made last month. I double batched it. So I made two of it and froze half of it. And so I just pulled that out yesterday morning, and all I had to do was make the rice. And that was our supper last night.
Wow.
So, yeah. You caught me off guard with that.
Sorry. We usually ask people what they just ate, not what they're about to eat.
Right. Exactly. I was prepared for that question, but
yeah. It just came to my mind. I thought, wow, interesting. I know what we're having. Burgers. Because there's a cow on the table.
And that's right. That's something that we have. Like it's funny that you should say that, because I think when we went to go pick up our beef, that's what we had that night was burgers, because it was like, okay.
Kind of like celebrating. So, we haven't had beef in a hot minute. So celebrating having the beef back in the house.
Yeah, yay iron.
Yeah, yay iron. I always try to make butchering days sort of like a festival day a little bit with the kids. Like we bought the bananas and strawberries that Adelaide was eating when you and I got on. Sort of like a special, you know, we're a butchering snack.
Yes. The celebration. It's a holiday.
Yeah. Okay, so
we have
where we are. Yeah, Thanksgiving. So where are we in this journey through the meal planning? So you've described to us the pattern, 7 categories, 28 dinners, and then you roughed out your breakfast and then your lunches. Your lunches sound a lot like ours. Like we do a lot of leftovers for lunch, and we do a lot of, oh, this cottage pie could actually go just be turned into a soup or something, you know, weird lunches, I guess. And then Allison and I are both very similar to you with the sides. We don't really plan out our sides. She typically makes a salad, or she'll have spelt or rye, and they'll put that on the side with lard spread on it or something. Similar for us, depending on the time of year, like you said, the cucumbers, if it's the summer, maybe cucumber and tomato salad or something. But yeah, we always have sauerkraut, obviously.
Yeah. We usually have a ferment with it too. I think that's like, in my mind, that's sort of default. So I never plan it or.
Yeah. I'm sure all of our listeners are already like, obviously we have sauerkraut on the table. Don't even need
yes, to just, you know, on everyone, just put a little asterisk. There's a ferment.
Yeah. No more would we write it down than we would write down, be sure to put forks on the table.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
Okay. So you plan this monthly, but your app gives you the ability to kind of look back at last March, say, and mimic it if that mm-hmm. works for you. And it saves your recipes or something, you said.
Yeah, it saves the recipes. So I have all of my recipes in there, and then I can just drag and drop
a
recipe into a day. And then it generates a grocery list for me that week. So when I'm sitting down to do my Azure order once a month, I can actually generate a grocery list for the next 4 weeks. And so I can look through and like, okay, what do I need to order from Azure? What do I need to make sure I have in the freezer from our cow or, you know, chickens or whatever? And what do I'm probably going to have to like supplement from the local store.
Perfect. So you had told me something about that you felt like meal planning makes it easier for you to be able to shop from local farms. And I can see why, because also as a small time farmer, when people know what they're doing, you can plan ahead a lot better because, if you kind of place your order with this farmer every year or whatever, then it's very nice to be able to plan around that and know what you need to raise for your customers. Could you kind of give me, I'm the person that likes pictures, obviously, that's how we met. So could you just describe for me like a week with your plan? And I know you have days when you're out, and I know you homeschool, and you're a big time speaker going to these homeschool convention things.
Oh, not a big time. No, not at all.
Sold out stadiums and all of that. So,
right. That's me.
Obviously. So describe a week implementing your plan and a week that includes your plan getting screwed up. Because that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's fair. So a week where it goes well. On Sundays, like I said, I pull out all of the meats that will need thawed for that week. If there's any day that we're going to have some kind of rice or something, I'll just make a note of that on the calendar, knowing that I need to soak it the night before. And then if I'll look and see, like I said, if there's any sort of schedule conflicts that have come up since I made the meal plan. Mm-hmm. So like if, you know, I've planned a roast chicken that needs like 4 hours to roast on a day where we're going to be going to our nature group. Obviously, I can't do that. So I'll switch that out for like a crock pot meal or something like that.
Charlotte Mason.
And then,
so you're so Charlotte Mason. Kind of
group. Yes, our homeschool nature group. or, you know, whatever, if there's an appointment that comes mm-hmm. up or something like that. And then every day it's pretty much set for me. I know that some people I can't do this. Chop up all their veggies in advance. Oh. So like Sunday afternoon, they'll just have a major chopping session and have everything prepped for the week. But I've never been able to do that.
You,
so if anybody out there can do that, props to them.
Props to them. You are also planning your homeschool week on Sundays, right?
Yeah,
Sundays. I can see how that kind of takes the place of chopping veggies.
Yeah. I don't know that I would do that anyway, to a certain extent. I know this is probably sounds kind of weird, but sometimes when I get ready to make our supper, in some ways it can be a little cathartic because I'm just sitting there chopping vegetables.
I understand.
And it doesn't take a whole lot of thought. So it's almost like a time where I can kind of just not have to think about much, or I can process things or whatever. What I've been doing lately is listening to audiobooks while I cook supper. I've listened to your podcast also while I cook supper. So yeah, so I'll at the end of the day, usually around 5 o'clock, sometimes later, mm-hmm. I'll start making supper. And, you know, it does take time. This way of cooking it's not quick.
Yeah.
So it can take an hour and a half to make supper. But I've just accepted that, you know, that's that time that I'm going to have to do that every day. And then it's on the table. And if the week goes well, that's what every day looks like. If I have a crockpot meal, I put that together in the morning, usually while I'm making breakfast. I'll just chop everything for that, throw it in the crockpot, and then it's done by the end of the day. So yeah, that's a good week.
I really like that. And it does take time, as you said. Mm-hmm. But if you don't, I do find one of the things that I have analyzed about myself that I love the most about holidays is that I have planned what I'm going to make and I have all the puzzle pieces. And in my head, all I have to do is just enjoy the immense pleasure of putting them together. And it doesn't feel like I'm thinking. And it is things that I make over and over, you know, like on Christmas, I always make this, on Thanksgiving, I always make that or whatever. So it feels repetitive and calming. And I can see how that would happen with this meal plan. So you're not making 100 decisions. When you get out all your meat on Sundays, do you have one like bin in the freezer where you, or fridge where you put it all? Or just kind of cram it into pans or what do you do?
No, I have a bowl in the bottom of the fridge. I actually got the idea from, I don't know if you ever heard of the site, what, Nom Nom Paleo?
Yes, I have. I think I,
yeah. So Michelle Tam, she's the, yeah, she, I think she has more than one. I used to be really into paleo, not anymore, but, when I was, I listened or I've read her site a lot and she has, I think she calls it like the protein bowl or something like that. And she puts all of her meats in there. And I thought that is a great idea. So yeah, I got into that.
It's those little simple things that just streamline things. And
yeah. And if you have it, like I said, if you have it part of your routine and it's something that you do every week, then it just becomes a habit. Mm-hmm. Maybe you should say her name again.
And do you... Okay, this is not something I was intending to ask, but now I'm curious because it happens to me. Mm-hmm. You get something out and you have a plan for it and then somebody else uses it. Does that ever happen to you? Or does everybody know that you have a plan so they don't mess with your...
I'm pretty much the only person cooking suppers in my house. So that generally doesn't happen. Yeah.
And I can see that if everybody knows you have a plan, then they would say... You know, is there a plan for this or can just anybody eat it?
Yeah. And I have a little schedule on our fridge of like our chores for the week and it has a place on it for our meals too. So most of the time I forget to write them in there, but when I do, everybody knows what's coming up.
Bring to mind your kitchen. Now imagine it full of expert women fermenters ready to teach you everything they know. Vegetables, salumi, drinks, kefir, dairy, sourdough, vinegar, koji, and much more. The Fermentation School is just that, online, in your kitchen, whenever you want. World-leading female educators sharing their incredible experience in video courses that will guide you step by step through your next fermentation project. Ancestral Kitchen Podcast has teamed up with the school to offer its 60 plus courses to you at a 10% discount. When you say yes, you'll also be supporting the work Andrea and I do as you skill up. Go check out their courses via the link in the show notes. I'm betting there's something there that's going to get you really excited. Happy fermenting.
Yeah. And you mentioned that the planning is, or the work is kind of cathartic and you listen to a book or a podcast or something. So do you have your kids in the kitchen with you much when you're cooking or is that just not something you're doing right now?
Sometimes I do. My daughter likes to help sometimes. There's actually one of the breakfast things that we rotate. She likes to make the oat to apple bake thing that we make.
I love that. Whatever that is. It sounds really good.
I'll send it to you. It's really
like, you're going to send me the food or you're just going to tell me how to do it.
I could try sending you the food, but it might be kind of messy by the time it gets there. But we could try it. You know, you never know.
Is it a recipe I could give to the patrons? Is that like shareable?
I got the recipe from it was kind of funny. I was looking for an oat bake type thing that didn't have eggs in it for my daughter. So it's actually from a vegan website, but I've modified it to soak the oats and I use kefir, so it's not vegan. So So I can put it together and give it to you. Yeah, that definitely.
Amazing. Do you do much in the way of canning or getting bulk veggies and freezing them? I know you alluded to buying half a cow. I think you've also told me that you buy pork in bulk. How do these factor into your plan? And you did talk about the Azure ordering, but you mentioned, you know, when you know your year ahead, then you can buy, like, if anybody's bought a side of beef, then they know you have to tell them, I want X pounds into ground, I want X number of roasts. Can you tell me how you know that? And then do you do any of the other things for bulk food?
Well, for the beef, I just kind of know approximately what we use in a year. Just because we've been doing it for so long.
Yeah.
So
I always go off of 50 weeks. I don't even do 52 because, like you said, sometimes you randomly, you eat at your mom's or something happens, you know. But I always think, okay, 50 weeks, I want 2 chickens a week or whatever. That equals 100 birds or something.
Yeah. Or you want like a pound of ground beef a week plus like, you know, 1 or 2 roasts a month or... Mm-hmm. However many, like if you want to grill steaks, like once or twice a month or whatever, how that works out, you can kind of get an idea of what your family might use. But basically, I just use the same cut sheet every year.
No, so perfect. Take the decision making out of it. There's too much decision making days. You have to make
so many
decisions.
Really well.
Like, am I going to go at this light or am I going to wait? I mean, just zillions of decisions. Am I going to answer this phone call or am I going to ignore Rebecca again? I'm just kidding. I would never calls.
I don't call you, so.
I haven't had the opportunity. But do you can much?
Well, you and I have talked about this so much. I really want to. And I actually bought a pressure canner about a year and a half ago. And I taught myself how to can as far as I could. And I canned one little jar of carrots that I was so proud of myself because I didn't, you know, I don't have anybody to teach me. And I haven't done anything since.
That's fine.
So it's on the horizon. Okay, I really do want to do it. But I just haven't been able to get to that. But I do freeze quite a bit. You know, if we have a surplus of anything from a local farm or whatever, if Azure's having a sale like they have, we really love their juice grade apples.
Oh.
And so we'll dehydrate those or make them into applesauce. They actually still have them. I think they're still selling the juice grade apples. Even I know it's usually it's not this late in the year. So or I guess early.
What are we now? I don't even know.
So there's, you know, Azure really has like some good sales on produce if you can buy it in bulk. One thing that I've really wanted to start looking into is different ways to store root vegetables like potatoes and other things, alliums, onions, beets, all that stuff. So I can buy it in bulk, whether locally or from Azure, and then have that,
you know,
because it's really just that whole idea. That's one of the things that I recommend the most to people is buying as much as you can in bulk, because it's so nice to not only save the money, but when you run out of something in your kitchen, knowing that you can just like go to wherever you store your food and basically shop from that. And just pull it out and it's there and you don't have to run to the store and spend a lot of money and, you know.
Yeah, feel taken advantage of because you got it in the wrong season or whatever.
Right, right.
When you said your cut sheet, you were talking about your cut sheet and you said that, you know, I want 1 to 2 roasts a month. It's funny because before I would have thought, well, why do you need way more than that? But then when you say you want 4 beef meals a month, and I'm thinking, oh yeah, you're really putting things in perspective for me.
Well, it's all relative. I mean, that was just an example.
No, but
if I'm only having 1 beef dish a week, then obviously I wouldn't need 4 pounds of ground beef per month plus the roast. But it is a way to break it down.
I really like it.
Yeah.
And you already answered my question about, do you repeat meals or patterns? Like, do you always do Taco Tuesday or something? And you said you always have fish on Fridays and then special breakfast on the weekends.
Yeah. Otherwise, the repetition is mainly in the protein, not necessarily the dishes. Honestly, I don't think I can get away with having tacos every Tuesday with my family.
I probably
family,
couldn't either. So. They'd probably rebel. But the way you have it set up, even if you're repeating your categories, you're still not coming across them that often. I am shooketh. And do you ever make something and your family just goes, no? Like you said, the egg casserole.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I do like to try new recipes pretty often. And if they don't like it, they're pretty vocal about that. I mean, we do have a rule that no matter what, unless it's like absolutely horrible and it's making you retch, you have to eat it. But they'll let me know if they don't like it. And that has definitely happened.
Did I ever tell you, maybe this story came out of Colorado. I don't know. My mom told us a story when we were a kid about cowboys. And the way the cowboys had set this plan up, it's a joke. It's probably not a real story. But the way the cowboys set their meals up was, you know, one cowboy would cook until somebody complained. And then the person who complained had to take over and then so on. And it was a pretty good plan, she tells us, until the cowboys caught on. And the one guy who was cooking was just cooking forever and nobody would complain because they didn't want the job. And so then he made, poured salt into the beans and made them really horrible. And so they're eating dinner and one of the cowboys goes, boy, these beans are salty. And the guy who cooked it looks at him all hopeful. And the guy goes, but they sure are good.
I think maybe we need to incorporate that rule into my family. That'd be great.
I remember complaining about food one time when I was a kid. And we're eating macaroni and I said like, oh, this isn't very cheesy or something I said, there's not very much cheese in these. And my dad said, well, you don't have very much manners or something. Never complained again.
Wow. I've asked my kids not to complain, but they still
do. It's learning. It's a learning process.
Yeah.
I mean, it is good to know what people like.
Yes.
You know, that's helpful information.
Yeah, and I don't want them to ever get to the point where they're like, well, I can't say anything bad about this, even though I absolutely hate it, because she's going to get mad at me.
Yeah. So.
I try to keep that in mind, but sometimes I'm like, I just spent an hour and a half cooking this.
How dare you. And you also answered my other question, which was, do you meal prep in the beginning of the week or do you prep at the moment? Which I like that you prep in the moment. I have never figured out why people say, just take an hour every Sunday. I'm like, it takes me 7 hours, bro.
It would take me a lot longer than an hour.
I'm not doing this in an hour.
Yeah. And I mean, there's other times where, you know, I'm making sauerkraut or I'm making curtido or, you know, some kind of like beet kvass, some kind of ferment where it's like, I don't want to chop up more vegetables. I just do the ferment. That's it.
Yeah.
Just leave it at that.
Yeah. Or like you said, something unexpected, you know, somebody brings you a cabbage. So that day you chop it up
in
a cabbage salad or something.
Right. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So I'm just going to recap. Okay, so you make your 7 categories, but they're already made.
Mm-hmm.
You peg 4 meals into each one. You disperse them across the month as makes sense. You use your app to pull up your recipes and to even repeat throughout the month things that are seasonal for you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You place your Azure orders once a month, and you kind of base your meals on their sale catalog, which is really good, actually. They send it with your orders.
Mm-hmm.
You make your cut list for your farmer. And if you have a CSA or something, that probably ends up in a lot of your sides, right? Like this fresh.
Yes. Yeah. Mainly that's where the veggies mainly end up is on the sides.
Roasted broccoli and whatnot. And then your breakfast, you pretty much have the same thing during the week. And then you have a couple special rotations on the weekend. And then lunch is Bits and Bobs,
from the fridge, leftovers, yeah. things like that.
Yeah, or any other proteins that we have on hand, hard-boiled eggs or cheese. Or
And then
yeah,
you make whatever. The meals. You don't prep them all, but you thaw all the meat on Sunday. You get everything out as you review your list. Mm-hmm. You adjust your list based on, you know, the chiropractor appointment moved and now I'll be home late. I'm going to do the crock pot or whatever. And if it's a crock pot meal, you start it in the morning.
Yeah.
This does not sound that hard.
Yeah. And one thing also I just want to add that has been really, really beneficial is what we did yesterday. So if I look at the meal plan and there's meals on there that I know are ones we like and that they freeze well, I'll double it. And I'll make, you know, a double batch and freeze half of it and stick it in the freezer. I just got, have you ever heard of super cubes?
Yes, actually, we just had a whole conversation about that in the Discord.
Yeah, so you could totally freeze things without the super cubes. I've done it for a long time and it's been fine. But they really do make it so much more convenient.
Yeah, Allison has something, I think a different brand. And okay. she really likes them and she makes me want them.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can freeze them into individual portions, like 2 cup size, 1 cup size, 1/2 cup size, whatever. That's actually how I did my soup today for lunch.
And that saves
and
container.
So when you double batch.
It saves your containers because it's a great way to use up all your jars is to try to put a bunch of stuff in the freezer.
Yes. Yeah. So you can put them in like Ziploc bags. I like to put them. I have the, I have one of those food savers. Mm-hmm. So a couple of weeks ago, we have something that we call sick soup and, it's just sick soup. Oh. Yeah. So it's a specific soup that I make when somebody's sick and I make a big batch of it and freeze it so that, you know, when somebody's sick, including if it's me, we have soup on hand and I used the super cubes and then I vacuum sealed the little cup sizes. And using my food saver and it's pretty awesome.
I want these toys.
If you can double batch, if you can make 2 batches of something and then freeze it, that is an excellent way to save yourself from going, you know, ordering out or starving or whatever. Yeah,
since we can't order out here, you know, starving is our only option. So the super cubes shall save us.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, those are like silicone, right? So you can push the frozen thing out.
Yes. And, they pop right out.
And it thaws a lot faster when it's not in a glass jar, too.
Yes, definitely. And you don't have to worry because I've frozen stock in glass jars in the past. And it's just like, I don't know.
It's very inefficient on space, too, because it's all round.
Yes. And... Yes.
Yeah. Oh, wow. This is so wonderful. Okay, I have another question I want to ask, but I'm going to save it for the after show. Kind of Charlotte Mason-y. So patrons, jump over to the private podcast and you'll hear a couple more minutes of just gloriousness. So this all sounds so good. I'm going to check out your website that you talked about because I am very curious about the fact that I can save recipes in there. And
Yeah, it's really handy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I can see how you say it's useful. You could do it without it, but also you're just sparing yourself the time and shuffling through stacks of paper or whatever. It's nice.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And you can import recipes from websites, which just makes it easier. It's just, you don't have to copy anything.
I do like that.
Yeah.
Well, Rebecca, is there anything else you want to say about this meal planning?
I don't think so. I hope it's been helpful. Like I said, it feels a little convoluted to me, but again, that's how my brain works. So I hope that there's hopefully something that people can take from it.
Yes, I really like the repetition and I still see the variation within repetition because even if you had cottage pie 12 times a year, if you're making it with what you got in your CSA, it would be different every single time.
Yeah, that's true. Yep, different vegetables.
Yeah. So I see. Oh, I just see decisions made ahead of time, which is, who was it, Patton or some general who said, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail or something. Abraham Lincoln or Aristotle or somebody.
One of those guys. Yeah. Sounds like all of them.
They probably were sitting around and like, let's say this.
Yeah.
Well, I like it. I like it a lot. And just reiterate for everybody where we can find you online.
Well, my website is ahumbleplace.com. And I actually also have, it's something that you've mentioned before on your podcast. So I'm just going to mention again, but for any fellow homeschoolers or people who just want to help their kids with eating traditional foods, I have a printout or free printable for the Nourishing Traditions Cookbook for Children. And it's just basically a schedule to go through the whole book with your kids and allow them to cook with you and learn.
Oh, yes.
So I have that on my website.
I did want to say that because that is really cool. I'll link it in the show notes so people can go find it.
And then on Instagram, which I'm not incredibly active on there, but I do post like once a week or twice a week, is A Humble Place.
Perfect. And I'll link that in the show notes too. So, you know, if you're driving, don't take your hands off the wheel. It's already there. Don't we wrote it down for you.
Or don't be unsafe.
Wow. I love it. Oh, this is so fun. Rebecca, I love visiting with you so much. And I am so happy that I just got a little insight into your brain. And
well, I'm glad I could share it.
All right. Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. This is my question or thought that popped up while you were talking about the planning. And it relates to a conversation I've been having with other Charlotte Mason moms about completely something else. Mm-hmm. But I guess I always resisted meal planning because it felt restricting. But what we were talking about was how there's this modern idea in the world that freedom is just being able to do whatever you want, but that actually turns into overwhelming exhaustion. And in a way, what you've described is just total freedom. And I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you can, like, to a certain extent, you can even see that at the grocery store, like the different types of grocery stores. And you guys have talked about this in the past too, but we go to a really small, when we have to get local groceries, we go to a really small local chain called, well, it's not local. It's in a bunch of states now. It's called Natural Grocers.
Oh, yeah.
But it started here in Colorado.
I've been to them and I love that store.
They try to carry stuff from local places if they can. We buy our honey there. It's from a honey place that's just up the road from us, but has really weird hours, and the owner's kind of grumpy. So we get it from the store. Perfect. But it's, you know, it's local, or we get it from our raw milk dairy, one of the two. But anyway, the difference between that store and the larger local store, the one closest to us, is called King Supers, is really, it's a big difference. And I never really thought about it until I never really understood why I felt calmer at Natural Grocers versus King Supers until I realized that I'm not inundated with like thousands of choices. Oh. I mean, you walk down the cereal aisle and it's just like this bank of boxes. At the regular grocery store, and it's a little bit different at Natural Grocers. I mean, it's still a grocery store, but that idea of not having all these choices and not being able to pick whatever you want at any time, I think it really is more peaceful.
I would agree. It is one of the stressful things about, obviously, Allison and I spend a lot of time talking about food and thinking about food. Food is wonderful. And nobody can live without it. But when you say something like, you know, eat this, and then somebody tries to go find it, and there's 1 billion choices, it can just shut you down right there. And I know a lot of people who have said, oh, I've wanted to try sauerkraut forever, or just fill in the blank, but they didn't because it was just overwhelming.
Yeah
I get that.
I mean, I think
you go.
Well, I was gonna say, I think that some choice is good, so that's like kind of what we were talking about. Like, I can't remember exactly what I was gonna make for supper tonight, but I know that one of the meals is a simpler one. And if I need to make that tonight, I can, because I have the ingredients on hand, and then I can just switch whatever I was going to make tonight and make that tomorrow night or whatever. So I do have options within the framework of my meal plan. It's just that I have those meals. So I have the options instead of like, what am I going to
do? Yeah. Like you said, everything's thawed. So you could just say, sausage casserole is happening. And there is a lot of value. I was reading Misty Winkler's book.
Which one?
Something like how to use a calendar without wasting time or something like that. What's it called?
Oh, I don't know that one.
I'll that is not the title for sure. But
I know she just came up with one. It was like housekeeping or something, but then she's got
I've given up
the convivial homeschool. I don't know. I'm reading one of them. That's why I'm asking.
Jumping over to her. Yeah, I'm just jumping over to her shop to see what it was, because she was just talking about how to use a planner without wasting time. Hey, I was pretty close.
You were close.
Yeah. But she kind of emphasizes repetitively, because we need repetition because we're humans, not robots.
Yeah.
She emphasizes the importance of getting things off your brain because of how much it consumes of you. And I know that that is just from the way you live your life. I know that that is really important to you, not having to carry it around on your brain dashboard forever with a zillion tabs open kind of feeling, using up all your RAM, torching all your internet because you're just trying to remember. Right. So when you said, I don't know what we're having for dinner, that's actually one of the beautiful things about your planet. You don't have to remember right now.
Right. I know that when I'm done here, I can go downstairs and be like,
it's already handled.
Right. And then just make it.
Yeah. Like, I think that's a selling point, not a, like a selling point that you don't remember.
I hope so. Yeah.
Oh, I heard it right.
Yeah. I think as much, I mean, if you can like,
sorry, what?
Oh, that's fine. My husband is really big into automating things. So we both run our own businesses and we're both solopreneurs. So we both do everything on our own. I mean, he helps me with some of my stuff and I help him with some of his stuff. For most part, we're doing it all on our own. And so as many processes as we can that we can automate is really good. But also, like, I mean, you're talking about Misty's book and the power of routine, but it's really just habit,
you know?
Right. And that goes back to Charlotte Mason. And she said specifically, like, all of the million decisions that we have to make in a day are exhausting, and habit helps us with that.
Why does she know everything? And she said it all best already.
140 years ago or whatever.
I know.
20 years ago. Yeah. Or 100 years ago, I guess. Yeah.
I know. She just knows.
It's just like, except, you know, I don't exactly agree with her ideas on food, but that's okay.
Sure. Yeah, that's fine. Nobody said she was God. She would probably be offended if somebody even put her
name. I think she definitely would be. Yeah.
No. when I went to Melissa Norris's event last summer, the one in Idaho, is wonderful. I listened to Daniel Salatin give a talk, and he was talking about, I don't even know what he was talking about, but the part that I heard, I had to keep running back and forth to my table. So I would just jump into sessions, listen for like 15 minutes and then run back to my table. He said for daily chores, I think the number he threw out there was, if you're doing over 25 or 30% of, or if more than 25% of it is the same thing every day, you're never going to move forward, make forward progress, and you need to automate some systems. Wow. And I was like, what?
That's a low number.
Yeah. And I texted to Lexi, and she said, what does this mean about dishes then? And I was like, yeah, I'm thinking that too. Like, literally, how do we automate some of these things? And And automating dishes could be things like getting everybody in a routine of rinsing and stacking or something, right. or just putting it in, yep. or whatever it might be. But you've automated so much of your meal planning, like well over 75%, or at least 75% of it, you know? So you're not burning through that time like your husband used to tease you about, which is
cute. Yeah, it wasn't efficient. I mean, he was perfectly in his right to make fun of me because I was not efficient at all.
Yeah. No, but you found an efficiency that serves you, which I think is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
What book are you reading of Misty's right now? Now I want to know. I'm looking at her website.
I think it's the Convivial Homeschool, but let me look.
Oh, I really want to read that.
It's the one that's like 30 days, I think.
Oh, let me see. All shop items.
I'm reading it with a friend and it's on my phone because it's only available through Hoopla. And so I'm really bad at that because I hate reading things on my phone.
Oh, I know. It's hard for me too.
But the few things that I have read from it have been really good. I'm like having to log in and stuff. Let me just
She always drops these little nuggets. You're just like, oh.
Yes.
Why didn't I think about that? Like just when you said four categories or seven categories and there's four in each, I was like, oh, that is 28 meals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Convivial Homeschool.
The Convivial Homeschool. Yes. I would love to read that book. I have heard so many good things about it.
Yeah.
30
daily she's really into routines and
confidence and cheerfulness as you homeschool. That's her advertisement.
Yes. Cheerfulness. My kids would not say that I'm cheerful, so I can't do that.
Well, sometimes things can be wearing, and you're always, you know, Miss Mason had advice about that too. You know, when you're repetitively doing things or getting a sour attitude about things. So,
And
she does chalk a lot of it up to habit, which if we have bad habits, and Misty's alluded to this too, if we have bad habits, our children are going to basically learn that from us. And that's great.
Yes.
Just what I wanted to hear.
Passing on the traits. Yeah.
I know. Whereas if we have good habits.
That's a good thing to pass on. I never really thought about habits as much until I started reading Charlotte Mason, but then, like I said, it just comes up everywhere. I mean, especially like when you guys were talking about routines with ferments and stuff, I was like, yeah, that's habit. It's just getting ourselves into a good routine and allowing ourselves to be kind of guided by that routine. It makes things much more streamlined and takes care of so many things without us having to think about them.
It's so true. And Miss Mason lived in a time where, you know, possibly we could even argue there were less decisions to have to be made.
Mm-hmm.
And society was a bit more constructed. So, you know, just simple things like how to behave when you walked in a room or when somebody walks in a room were already laid out. You didn't have to decide, you know. So.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know why food always takes us to some deep
space. It's such a big part of our lives in so many ways.
Especially like you said, when you eat this way, it consumes a lot. There we go with the food pun again. But it consumes a lot because you, well, obviously I know you go to McDonald's all the time.
Every day. I love it.
Slow histamine for real.
Yeah, especially right now.
But
you were joking that we could do that bulk where I buy just a bunch of cheeseburgers and freeze them. So that gets rid of the histamines right there.
but yeah, that's not really an option for us, you know.
So. No, I don't feel like it is.
It's such a nice way to say it.
I mean, it is like, yeah, I could do that, but I don't think I really can.
I took Jacob to a McDonald's in an airport once when he and I were flying, when he must've been very young. And it was one of those odd hours flights, and there was no food. And I was like, oh, let's eat a burger. I know they're bad for you, blah, blah. We both vomited everything up. And he's reminded me ever since, don't you ever take me to that place again. And he asked me the other day, he said, how do people go there? Because we drive past a McDonald's. It's like by one of the gas stations we go to. And so they always see people in line there. And he said, how do those people go there all the time? Aren't they, you know, he's just picturing that they're all throwing up, but they go. And I said, well,
what an image.
Why are there so many bathrooms to all the McDonald's? And I told him, well, they might actually throw up if they ate at our house because their digestive system is conditioned to that. And it would be a shock to their system if they ate what was actually the species appropriate diet, but it would be, and he understood it because he's seen that with animals. You know, you can,
that makes sense.
Yeah, you can feed an animal a horrible diet and they'll eat it, you know, if they're starving and if that's what they've been conditioned to eat. But, like our dogs eat lots of bones, chicken bones, you know, pork skulls, whole eggs, raw milk. And a lot of people would say, don't give those things to your dogs. And it probably would make a lot of dogs really sick. But these dogs are totally accustomed to it. So it doesn't, you know, but it's more species appropriate for them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, even like, flavors, it doesn't, the idea of McDonald's, I used to go there once a week when I was a kid, and it was either McDonald's or Burger King. It was one of the two.
Oh yes, Burger King.
And I had that craving, you know, because I had it every week. And now like I can drive past and I think, it just doesn't really appeal to me. And I thought like, maybe it's a price thing because, you know, eating at places like that can be a lot cheaper. But my husband was telling me, because he travels a lot for his job, and sometimes that's all that there is.
Especially the places he goes that are like out in the boons.
He lives, he goes to really small towns in the middle of nowhere, and there's nothing. And it's just like Taco John's or McDonald's. And so he goes to McDonald's, and I cannot believe how much a meal there is now, because I think the last time I went to McDonald's, it was like $3 or $4 for an extra value meal, and now it's like three times that. Whoa. I think, I don't know. I don't know the prices, so it's
way back when Allison and I started, I talked about the book Radical Homemakers.
That's, I read that because you talked about
with Shannon Hayes. She talks about that in the opening of that book, how she did the math. And if you meal planned with a chicken, a loaf of sourdough bread, and broccoli from a local, and she was priced, she's in New York. Okay. She's priced. She's not like in Missouri or something saying, obviously chicken's cheap. No.
Right.
And she expressed how that was actually cheaper than taking your family to like Burger King or whatever those places you described.
Yeah.
And your husband's kind of confirming that.
Yeah. I was really surprised when I saw that, because I was like, wait, isn't an extra value meal like $3? He's like, no, what year are you living in? But even, and it's not even just that, like you go to the store and you buy a box of hamburger helper or, you know, whatever options there are for kind of ready-made, pre-made meals. And it really, it adds up. Whereas if you're putting meals together with your own ingredients, like it's not like $2.
Right.
But I don't know. I maybe I'm out of touch, but I feel like it's cheaper.
Yeah. Well,
just based on how we used to spend versus how we do now.
How much would it cost you if every week you were going to the store and buying ingredients to make seven meals or whatever for night and then set breakfast and stuff like cereal? super expensive.
Yes. Yeah, I can't believe how expensive cereal is. It's just, it's crazy. And most of the box, I've been reading things that in recent years, because of inflation, the companies aren't changing the box size, but they're changing the amount inside of it or something like that. Not just for cereal,
I have seen that on something else. Somebody did a video, or Gary showed me a video on, like, you know, those the YouTubes or something. You're right. Yeah, the size is the same, but the ounces went down. The guy was showing pictures from different years.
Right. And the price has stayed the same. So you're getting less per ounce, but psychologically you think you're getting the same because, you know, the container is the same size.
So
when you're buying like canned and boxed things, those really convenience meals, it can definitely add up. I mean, I definitely have used them and I feel like maybe there is a place for them when you're just really stretched thin and
a grocery store can come in clutch at times.
Yeah.
And I've experienced that before. Like, oh, thank goodness I can buy a loaf of sourdough bread, you know?
Right.
Until we rebuild all our villages and I get you to move out here to live on the farm and obviously make me my lowest.
Yeah, but if you're meal planning, then you have those 28 meals, you don't have to worry, like, that doesn't become, it's not as much of a problem.
Yeah.
Especially
and you'll have some meals, like burgers would go in my category of probably a higher cost meal because of how much meat each person's getting and then all of that. But then that's going to be balanced over the span of your month by having some of your lower cost meals. So it'll come out in the wash a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And when you said that you used to go to McDonald's, I stopped listening to you. No, I'm just kidding. And I
was like in first grade.
Yeah. Well, these days we hold things against you forever. So you're not allowed. You're not allowed to repent. But you said you craved it. And
when I was a kid. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. And that made me think of Miss Mason again, where she talks about cultivating your children's taste and that sometimes, you know, she's not an advocate of the just child-led decisions for life, although she really wants you training your children so that they are making a significant number of choices by the time they, you know, leave your leadership, if you will. But, part of that reason is because when we're children, we are still cultivating our taste, both for foods and, you know, books or media or whatever. And and we can have it cultivated very poorly, you know, to desire basically things that aren't beneficial for us.
Yeah.
Definitely. I read so much of what she writes, and I think you could just drop food into this paragraph, like take out the word book and put food, you know, and it
definitely,
it just applies. And she, of course, she uses food metaphors for everything. She literally calls it a wide,
right? Because it's the feast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I feel like a lot of, so much of what she says, like just what you said, it goes hand in hand that everybody, you know, I'd be like, well, everybody should be eating this way.
Yeah.
You just listen to Charlotte Mason, she'll tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. But, such good things. Oh, well, I guess I need to go help cut up this cow and, you need to go make sausage casserole or something.
Oh. Yes. Yeah, sausage and potato casserole. It's one of our staples.
Sounds amazing. Actually. Yeah. Wait, there's no eggs in it?
No eggs. It's just potatoes, onions, and sausage and Italian seasoning. What? It's very simple.
Wait, like, okay. Hold on. Before you go.
Oh, ghee. Well, I put ghee.
I need a little bit more description. Just like a sheet pan thing or like a casserole dish?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a sheet pan thing. Roast it for an hour and it's done.
Can you text me a picture of it, please?
It's not a pretty meal.
The best ones but never are. Oh my word. Allison and I have talked about that too. How our food looks sometimes so ugly, but it is so good.
I've I've taken lots of really bad food pictures. Like, one of our favorite dishes is moussaka. Moussaka is that, like, eggplant casserole. the recipe from Nourishing.
Eggplants are not photogenic.
Sorry. No, they're really pretty when you're chopping them up when they're fresh, like with their little seeds in them. Yeah. But when they cook, it's just like this slimy, kind of disintegrating grayish
matter.
Me on it
right there. Slimy. But it's true.
Right. Maybe I'm making it wrong. Maybe it should be pretty.
I don't know. Cooks Illustrated managed to pull off some pretty pictures of eggplant, but I feel like that's their jobs.
Well, and all the food bloggers too. They always manage to make their food look so pretty. And then when I make it, it's like, I don't know, what did I do wrong?
You didn't have a ring light. That's where you went wrong.
Yeah, I guess.
You didn't have a staged background. So.
Right. Here's my counter.
Is that a meal, the sausage thing you just described, that you could make extra of and freeze?
I don't know. I've never tried that one, just because it is so easy to throw together. And it takes like an hour to roast. So it like takes maybe like 5 minutes to prep and then an hour to roast and it's done. So I've never thought about it. That's one of those just really quick, simple ones.
That's a good hip pocket recipe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can send it to you if you want. I modified it because the original recipe is with olive oil, and I don't like to cook with olive
neither.
Oil, so I just use ghee instead.
Obviously. Yeah. I'll probably use lard.
Right. And I don't have any lard because our pork harvest is not right now. And it hasn't been recent.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's another option. Definitely.
I am swimming in lard, so everything turns into lard these days.
Well, I could send you the apple bake and you could send me some.
That
lard,
sounds like a deal for me. I'm into it. All right, Rebecca, I got to let you go do your life.
Yes.
This was amazing.
Too.
Thank you.
Yeah, this was fun. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I hope you'll come back. Please.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening. We'd love to continue the conversation. Come find us on Instagram, Andrea's at Farm and Hearth and Allison's at Ancestral_Kitchen. Until next time, we both wish you much fun, exploration, and satisfaction in and out of the kitchen.